Uber's CEO was forced out last night. We'll talk to a guy who submerged himself in Uber's culture for the better part of 2 years about this. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Word came last night of the resignation of Travis Kalanick, the chief executive officer and co-founder of Uber, in the face of a shareholder revolt after outside investigators hired by the company found widespread abuses in its culture, including sexual harassment. Kalanick had first taken a leave of absence. Uber is a $70 billion company that sells rides in more than 80 countries and does not trade on the stock market. It's privately held. Adam Leshinsky is executive editor at Fortune magazine and author of the new book, Wild Ride, Inside Uber's Quest for World Domination. Adam, good morning to you.
Good morning, David.
Now, you immersed yourself into Uber's culture for this book. Do you think this company can still succeed without all the ridiculousness, obnoxiousness, and abuses?
I don't think the ridiculousness and obnoxiousness is what made Uber what it is, but its aggressiveness and its ruthlessness is what got it from, let's say, years 0 to 4 or so. That's what enabled it to butt heads with regulators around the country and around the world and to grow so quickly as a service. It's hard to remember in certain circles that many customers like it and find it of great value. So my optimistic self believes that this is a global company of giant proportions. And with the right leadership, absolutely can move forward. And it's simply impossible that the company has 14,000 bad apples in it. That's just not the case.
What do you think changed here? I mean, last week it was Mr. Kalanick, take a powder, a leave of absence, figure yourself out, do penance, come back strong. But now the company, or at least some investors, think Uber needs a permanent new CEO. What do you think shifted?
Well, I think the investor outrage grew. The strong opinion among the few people who mattered coalesced around the fact that, first of all, the leave of absence was a bit phony. He said, I'm not going to be CEO for some period of time. I can't tell you how long, but I'm still going to be involved in all the important decisions. I think they also recognized this was going to make it extremely difficult to recruit the next generation of leadership that they need for the company. In particular, they were looking for a chief operating officer. Who would take that job not knowing what Kalanick's ultimate status was? Now they can look for a chief executive officer and they can really shoot for the stars in terms of experienced talent.
And we should point out Travis Kalanick isn't really gone. He's still on the board of Uber and he must have a lot of voting stock.
He has what's known as super voting stock. And so while he doesn't control the company by himself, he can control the company with a couple key allies on the board of directors. But my sense is that his influence will be severely diminished as they look for a replacement for him.
Adam Leshinsky's latest book is Wild Ride, Inside Uber's Quest for World Domination. He's also executive editor at Fortune. Adam, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Now, several months after scrapping plans to build a plant in Mexico, the Ford Motor Company has announced a new location to build its next-generation Focus model. Ford was slammed by President Trump over a proposed move to Mexico, so for Ford South, it will not be, but instead, that-a-way, I say, pointing to China. Marketplace's Adam Allington has more.
What this decision highlights is the fact that despite all the bragging from President Trump that he was responsible for scrapping the Mexican deal, Ford was going to do what made sense for its global supply chain.
Most companies are going to do what affects their bottom line and what's best for their business first.
Kristin Dietschik is with the Center for Automotive Research. Ford claims the move will save the company $1 billion. And Dietschik says that moving production to China probably won't cost American jobs.
It's not going to be a net loss. The plant that currently produces Focus has been down, I think, to one shift for quite a while.
China's a growing market for Ford, and Carl Brower from Kelley Blue Book points out that the profit margins for compact cars are already thin.
Starting with that platform in China makes more sense because other markets are more small car and sedan friendly, while the U.S. has gone so SUV crazy, honestly, in the last 5 years.
Ford isn't the first U.S. carmaker to import vehicles from China, but the Focus would represent the highest number of Chinese-made cars in American dealerships. In Washington, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. Today's the deadline for insurers to submit plans for selling policies next year on the Obamacare exchanges. About 12 million people rely either on healthcare.gov or the state exchanges, but politics and market forces have destabilized these. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
As of today, 44 counties, most in Missouri and Ohio, are at risk of having no insurers selling Obamacare plans. That's about 31,000 consumers. Kaiser Family Foundation's Cynthia Cox says under President Obama, federal officials worked to make sure all consumers had at least one option.
This year, it's not clear whether the Trump administration is going to continue to make that same effort to ensure that there is coverage in every county.
Insurers have complained President Trump's executive order weakening the mandate people buy insurance and uncertainty over billions in payments to insurers have made selling Obamacare policies less attractive. That said, the insurer Centene raised eyebrows when it said it would expand its presence on the exchanges. Dan Mendelson is with Avalere Health.
One of the things that we're seeing right now is that in markets where there aren't any entrants, an insurance company will come in and say, hey, this looks like a great opportunity, so we're going to fill it.
While today is the deadline, how many counties, if any, end up with no insurers will depend on negotiations with federal and state officials in the run-up to the open enrollment period this fall. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And one of the best-kept secrets in America could be revealed tomorrow. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says a, quote, discussion draft of the Senate rewrite of the health care law could come out tomorrow with a final vote next week. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.